0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number, as usual. First of all, a couple of updates before we move on to much more serious issues. On Monday, we spoke to Margaret about a hen party that got a bit legless. I mean, the chair at the hen party got a bit legless. Margaret had paid a deposit of 1,000. She was worried that she wouldn't get it back. She paid the deposit herself, so the hen party and the bride had no idea that she was now facing losing all of her 1,000. We're happy to report that as we speak, the chair is in surgery and under the warm and capable and skilled hands of Derek Healy and Sons of Derek Healy and Sons in Crumlin and Dublin. He rang in on Monday offering to help, and himself and his son are now working on the chair, having collected it. Wait for this. After midnight last night. Remember, Derek was the man who came on the programme, said 24/7, 365, I'm your man. And apparently he is run off his feet, and he's legging it all around the country since Monday, picking up different jobs and people with different emergencies about their furniture that they need restoration. He's taking a photograph before and after of the legless chair, and he says we will be mesmerised and excited and delighted by the results. So we wait on that. The second issue is on the car keys, the Prius car, the car keys left in the back of a taxi. BMW one was the most identifiable one. Our caller said it was a Prius grey, which narrowed it down to about 3,000 taxis in Dublin, because they're all Prius at this stage and they're all grey. And as I said, we hope every taxi driver hasn't been asked, but we do hope many more taxi drivers will look for the keys. They are pinging. They were pinging on our caller's app in on our laptop, and they're flying all over the country. But their main location at night time seems to be Leixlip and Maynooth, if you can help find the keys. So the leg has been fixed, but the keys are still keyless. We'll keep you up to date. Now, to much more serious issues. Michelle Malloy, among many parents, has contacted us. Michelle, good afternoon. Why did you contact us?
Hi, thank you for letting me speak, first of all. I just wanted to highlight last week, lots of parents in Donegal East received a letter to say that they're going to lose all their therapies, as in speech therapy, physiotherapy, mm-hmm. And just no scale of when they will be coming back into place again, or just on the long finger. But that this, we were kind of fighting before this for kind of more services as it was, because my daughter, Sophia, was born 2 years ago with Down syndrome. And we've had, before this, we've only had physiotherapy, but we've lost that now as well. Mm-hmm. We've never seen a speech therapist, never had OT, never had any other. Yeah, we've never had, any of these services brought on to us. But on the letter, it said that this is over the last 12 months. But I know for a fact like it's been longer than that, because we've been waiting, and previous people that I've talked to have said they've been waiting longer. And anywhere we go or ask, we're just told they don't know. They don't know when it'll be back. We're just getting blank answers. So I just wanted to highlight the fact and see if it does any good, or to see if we know when we will get the services back.
Michelle, you've lost all the services for children with disability.
Yeah, all of the services, yeah.
And do they say why?
They said it's because they can't find anybody to pick up the positions.
Staff, they have the money, but they can't find the staff.
They can't find the staff.
Yeah.
But they don't have any way of saying that. I don't think cutting the services is going to, because early intervention for our children is like
critical,
so important. And
Michelle, what happened? All the staff that they had, obviously they were supplying the services before.
Yeah.
And now, do they say, insofar as any of us know, and you have, if they tell you all the staff are gone, they're hardly being economical with the truth. They're saying all the staff are gone.
they're saying there's nobody to take up the job, so whoever obviously was doing the job before has gone or whatever, or maybe taken a different position, I don't know. But all we're hearing is that nobody has taken up the positions.
So. And what's, and I presume, are there any alternatives voluntarily or otherwise?
Well, we can go private, and I'm lucky enough, I'm associated with the Donegal Oil Down Syndrome. Mm-hmm. So we do get some, but they're under pressure now as well. So that limits, you know, say like with speech therapy, we were hope, like you do hope to get it like every, at least every fortnight, where now we would be lucky to get it maybe once a month, and that's privately through Donegal Down Syndrome, nothing okay. to do with the HSE. So they're under pressure now as well. Because they are amazing, and they, apart from, and but it's not just Donegal Down Syndrome. Like the people in Donegal, like with autism, cerebral palsy, every other disability you can talk about, it, they're all included in this, and it's just crazy to think that we've there's no answers for the people out there.
They say Children's Disability Network teams. This is the HSE. Have been experiencing significant challenges in terms of recruitment of staff. As a result, vacancies are rising in Donegal, Cavan, Donegal, again, they mentioned Leitrim, Monaghan, Sligo. These services are delivered by the HSE and other agencies. Their human resources department and recruitment services have unfortunately been unable to recruit staff to fill the existing vacancies. However, efforts are active, ongoing, and the HSE and agencies locally and nationally, with the support of relevant government departments, are progressing a range of measures to try to address the workforce. They say they're trying to do it. Are you saying there's not enough urgency in it, Michelle? Or you've other ideas on where they might get staff?
Well, I don't think it's in the last 12 months. They're saying it's in the last 12 months, but I know for a fact that Fia is true now.
Okay.
And she has never seen a speech therapist, which is critical for especially with children with Down syndrome, like to help with eating and speech. They usually yeah. get it from about 8 months.
Yeah.
Like this is 2 years down the line and we're still waiting. So this is previous to that. So I'm scared to think of the waiting list that it's going to be by the time,
yeah.
like, will Fia even get it before she gets to school? Well, you know, that's my fear. But the only thing I could think of, if they do, we were talking about maybe if they maybe tried the private end and maybe paid for it for a while until they get the plan that they want to get into place.
Mm-hmm.
Or if not, there's young ones that were telling me that were leaving school this year said that they couldn't get into colleges because the places were, there was only 15 places in certain courses, and the point level was very high, and mm-hmm. maybe let me looking into that. Maybe I don't
you
know.
Points, high points are a product of yeah. supply and demand. The greater the
yeah.
demand, the less the supply, the higher the points.
Yeah.
So that speaks for itself that there is a great demand. They say as well, the HSE, I can assure you these vacancies remain a matter of urgency and our top priority.
Yeah.
Stay there, Michelle. I want to. It's a slightly different issue, but again, in the same general
yeah.
area. Emma contacted us. Emma, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Duffy. How are you?
Good, thanks. Tell me your situation, please.
Thanks, first of all, for having me on the radio, yeah. and it was very interesting to listen to Michelle. I'm on disability,
okay.
I have MS,
uh-huh.
and I was working, I was lucky enough, thank God, I was able to work there for 6 months, but I was out of work then because the contract was up, and I didn't know if I was going back or not. Now, I only found out last Monday that I actually
okay.
am going back because I'm employed through a recruitment agency.
Great, okay.
But the disability section, They did send me out a letter, all right, but I genuinely forgot all about it because I didn't know if I was going back or not, saying they were cutting my disability from the 6th of September, which is today. Now,
okay.
the minute I found out last Monday that I was going back to work, I rang them to tell them that I'm starting, going back to work, I just found out, but I don't get paid till the following week.
All
so
right.
they cut my disability down to 157.
Immediately?
Yeah, I got 157 today into my account. And I rang them and I sent an email as proof from the recruitment agency that I'm starting back. So between the jigs and the reels, I won't mention names, but I was told to go to my local CWO am I entitled to
community
to
welfare
help?
After for a supplementary, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, and she, I won't mention her name, but she's actually since retired, but they actually got rid of the CWO in Grey Cullen and Carlow a few years ago, and you have to drive over to Portlaoise or ring them. Okay. Now, with people with MS or other neurological conditions or any illness, Joe, it might not be feasible for them to drive over to Portlaoise, though it mightn't be. So
and
I did ring.
And Emma, as you point out, it mightn't also be economically possible. If they're looking, there's a bit of a catch-22. Are you looking for some financial help because of something that happened? And they say, well, you're living, you're now living because of our decision to shut offices. You're now living a good distance. So would you not try and get over to us? And you say, how am I going to get over to you?
I did ring them, Joe, and it was 10 minutes on hold and I just hung up. I gave up. So I did. It just kept ringing. You know, Dave, sorry, you're in the queue. We have a long queue. Do you know the usual? But I did ring again and I did send emails. I rang them a number of times and I was told by different people in the Longford department, because that's the number they're up in Longford, that there's nothing they can do and they won't be able to sort it out. All I'm asking for is just the disability for the 2 weeks, and then when I go back to work, the week I go back to work, cut it.
And what is the cut that you've had to endure unfairly, as you point out?
Well, because I have a child, my daughter, she's 12, so you get 270 a week on disability.
Okay. Yeah, and then,
which is pittance.
And then the cut brings it back to?
157.
Oh, for God's sake, how would you survive on that?
Well, you can't. And I was told by somebody else to go to St. Vincent de Paul and get vouchers. Hmm. Now, what's annoyed me, Joe, is the attitude. And I think it's quite demeaning telling somebody, go and get a few vouchers or go to your local CWO who doesn't exist anymore, because she's since retired and they're over in Portlaoise. But I think they should have a little bit more consideration and empathy for people who are genuine. I'm not looking for the sun, moon and stars. I'm just simply asking that my disability is just reinstated just for one more week, and then they can cut it, because I was honest with them from the very beginning that I am working and I'm very lucky that I can work. Because 3 years ago, Mr. Duffy, I went through a terrible time.
Yeah.
My legs went and I couldn't walk. So that's all I'm asking for, is just a little bit, you know, a little bit of help and just to get it reinstated. And that's it. Just for one more week and then they can cut it.
They say payment, this is a statement from the Department of Social Protection, a person's payment rates are not reduced when a person is not in employment. So why do they think you're in employment?
See, I was honest with them all along. I have emails to prove and all. My contract is finished up the end of April. That's fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was fully reinstated. That's fine, with reinstated for the summer, because I wasn't working. I didn't know until last Monday that I'm actually going back to the same position again, and I'm very grateful for that.
Okay.
But they cut my disability, and I have the proof and all. I can show you my bank statement. It's €157 I got in today, because disability is paid every Wednesday. And what I was told is that the department work a week in advance. Not like a job. A job, you work a week in arrears. Well, the Department of Social Protection work a week in advance.
So is that where you're is that where you're missing 2 weeks comes from?
This is the first week I've got 157, and next week I'm due another 157. But I don't start work till Monday, and I don't get paid till the following Friday.
They say, it's not funny.
Get me?
The department cannot comment on individual cases. We would be happy to discuss the matter directly with your caller.
Well, I rang them five times, Joe.
And you listen to Celine Dion's greatest hits, and then you listen to the best of Celine Dion. You're going through all her albums and you hold on there. And you don't even like Celine Dion.
No, I wouldn't be her biggest fan, no. But anyway, she's got a great voice, God bless her.
Good God.
I did ring them. I rang them straight away. I sent them emails. I told them from the very beginning I was working.
Okay.
And but it's just their attitude has really annoyed me.
Yeah.
Because some of the staff in there, I think they should go on a customer service training course.
But I know, in fairness,
yeah.
And I know everyone can't do this. I know everyone can't do this, but usually when it comes to the attention of the press office, especially, the people that we contact, they're absolutely brilliant. So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Stay there for a second. I'm Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is my text number. Gemma Fitzgerald, back to the Donegal situation. It's as catastrophic as that, is it, Gemma? Obviously, as Michelle pointed out.
Oh, it is, yeah. It is at the minute. And I think it's a nationwide issue, but particularly in Donegal, it hits us harder because we're bordered by the north. So people who live here and maybe are
registered speech and language therapists or OTs or whatever. They are, we're competing with the NHS in the north for staff as well. So we actually can't attract people to come and live here and come and work here. And as a result, we don't have the staffing capacity to meet or to get access to the services that we should have.
But the services aren't there.
Services aren't there because there's no staff at the minute. My son is under the care of the same team that lady referenced. We have only one speech and language therapist. We should have two. We have no physiotherapist. We should have one. We have only one OT. We should have two. We have one psychologist. We should have two. So our staffing is less than 50%.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't expect, like, people here and there are working really, really hard, but there's just too many people looking to access the services and the staff that the staffing ratios aren't provided. They're provided for, but we can't get people to fill them.
That's what they're saying. They're saying the same. They say they can't. They can't. I'm baffled as to why. Maybe I shouldn't be baffled because I know, for example, and these issues of short staffing can be caused by a number of reasons. For example, last week we were doing the issue of, again, same parents fighting for everything. They have to fight, like yourselves, have to fight for everything if we have a child with different needs. And they were talking about getting to the Enable complex in here in Sandymount, and they always had a bus, and now they can't. The drivers aren't available. And I met a man up in Belfast who was a bus driver. He's from the south, actually, and he told me he was with two colleagues. He said, "You know, the reason they can't get bus drivers is because of this ridiculous annual CPC, it's called, test imposed on them by the government that they all have to do one day every day. They all have to pay for. By the way, it's a quango." And he said, "People are just getting fed up with having to do more, pay out more money every year to stay at the same job." Now, I don't know if that's happening in other areas as well, but it seems to be an awful situation where, on the one hand, the HSE say they have the money, and they say they just can't find the staff. And I'm looking
These posts have been advertised for quite some time. Like, I know that I would have attended what they're called family forum meetings. We've had two of those with the manager from the CDNT team, and he very blatantly outlined what he had done and the steps he had taken to try and fill these vacancies, and they keep putting them up, and there's just nobody taking the bait.
Okay, well, tell us, what questions did you ask of him? You believed him, obviously. He can't get the staff.
The facts are there. When, like, when you're going into the office, the staff aren't there. Like, you have a beautiful purpose built. We've got a brand new primary care centre in Bulcrana, and it's a fantastic facility, and they moved all these things into it. But we just have rooms that therapists should be in. They're not, you know, because they don't exist yet. Like, the funding has been approved for them to have a job, but there's nobody in post.
But did he offer, did he or she in the HSE offer any explanation or solution, or is it just an impossibility? They cannot get the staff.
He said there was an issue with lists. They can't get the list process within HSC. We're in a list together with Galway in Donegal because we're part of the same HSC group. So what is happening was there might be people living in Galway who've applied for a speech and language post, but they don't want to come to Donegal and live because they live in Galway. Do you know what I mean? They're quite happy to wait on the list until they get a post closer to home, which kind of understand as well. Like, I wouldn't, you're asking people to operate their lives to come up. Like, we should have a specific Donegal list for people here. The other issue that he had highlighted, and that the speech and language therapist that works with the team had highlighted, was that speech and language therapists and occupational therapists have to be registered with a body called CORU.
Particularly
relating to speech and language therapists in Ireland, they graduate proficient in a thing called dysphagia, which maybe people who've trained in the UK, which would be quite common for people who might live here in Donegal, outside the border, might have done. They don't come out proficient with that. It's a postgraduate qualification, but you can't register with CORU until you have that course, essentially. So there might be people that are speech and language therapists that have worked in autism therapy for 10, 15 years within the NHS that we can't employ because they can't get CORU registered because they don't have the stage because the specialist practice.
Oh, my God.
You know?
CORU is another state body. You pay them every year to register. Everyone, I think, has to register legally.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a CORU catch-22 if there's different, and we know it's the same for the Teachers Council, there seems to be an awful lot of red tape on people from abroad either coming to work here as teachers for the first time or indeed returning teachers. They seem to have great delays with the Teachers Council.
And it's the same with nursing. Like, I am a nurse and a midwife myself, and I trained in the north in the NHS because I live in Inishowen, which is right next to the border with Derry, and it was just closer. And I had to jump through the same hoops to register in the south with on board alternates. When I wanted to change my registration across, and it is red tape, it is arduous, it takes a long time, and that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's the way it is.
Okay. Gemma and Michelle, and indeed all the other families who've been contacting us, thank you for laying out the situation so clearly, and kind regards above all to you and Fia and Dara. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Gemma. Joe at rt.ie. The WhatsApp number, you can leave a WhatsApp message anytime, any day, 087 184 3709.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Tara, good afternoon. Are you there, Tara? You're not on my screen, but I'm hoping you were there. Tara wants to talk to us about... are you there, Tara O'Grady?
I am indeed, Joe.
Good. What's the issue? You tell us, the cemetery in South Dublin called Dean's Grange Cemetery. What happened?
Well, basically, to my knowledge... They took the gates off, two of the gates. There's one still on, and two of the gates were removed 2 years ago because there was a plan to put a cycle lane through.
Yeah, and I remember that was abandoned.
Yes, that was abandoned, but they never put these two gates back up.
And they're important gates, I presume, from what you're telling me, into the cemetery.
Exactly, yes.
What does the absence of the gates, what effect does that have, in your opinion, Tara, on the cemetery?
Well, there'll be, in my opinion, there's several issues. One is it's open 24 hours a day. Yeah. There isn't security at night. So personally, I find that kind of disrespectful to the repose.
Has there been vandalism or...
I have no idea. I've noticed that a lot of the graves have overgrown because a lot of the reposed will have no relatives still living.
Isn't that a separate issue? And it was peculiar.
I don't know because there's 150,000 plots there, 70 acres.
Yeah.
So I'm not aware of anything, but my grandfather and my grandmother and my uncle are buried in St. Bridget's in there. And so... I'm just aware of that situation. And my grandfather was an associate of Michael Collins. Major J.P. Lyons was his name.
Okay.
And, you know, his uniform was donated to the Collins Barracks for his duties to Ireland, you know. And it's just sad, really sad, I feel, that they aren't watched over at night just to protect it.
But have any of them been damaged? Now, that being said, Tara, I was trying to explain to somebody yesterday who hasn't been up to Glasnevin Cemetery in Dublin, and I explained to them that it's a beautiful, magnificent resting place and a magnificent location of great history. But I was trying to explain to them that it's a walled cemetery, but also at each corner it has watchtowers. And they were asking me what was there a watchtower on a cemetery, and it's because those watchtowers were built and they were staffed every evening with men, apparently with some form of shotgun, to stop, back in the bad old days, body snatching. That there was body snatching, as we all know, going on in the late 18th and early 19th century. And the bodies, as we know, were being, fresh bodies, pardon the use of that awful word, were being removed and sold to Trinity College and Royal College of Surgeons or whatever. So they had to keep a watch. But those days are long gone, Tara. So, like, is there any evidence that the cemetery is suffering?
Well, I'm not a member of the guards and I haven't made inquiries with the guards. Yeah. All I've done is looked up by...
Well, I'm thinking of your own graveyard. In your own resting places of your own relatives in the graveyard.
Well, not so far, but I would hate to be having this conversation retrospectively. You know what I mean?
Okay. The council say
it's more about avoiding something like that happening rather than.
Okay,
saying,
I understand
well,
that.
It hasn't
now, is this? Did you already get this response from the Dunleary Ratdown council saying they've no intention of replacing the gates? The gates were removed to allow children a safer way to and from school as part of the council's active travel programme, i.e. to get people walking or put the country back on its feet. The programme has been extremely successful. Most cemeteries in Ireland are open to pedestrians and cyclists to use the cemetery after the main gates are closed. Where Glasnevin is not, Parmersound is not, where my family are buried. I don't know about other graveyards. But is the Inchgrained, have you noticed that it is a significant shortcut for children to school?
No, not personally, no. I haven't. And I've looked at the schools around there and no. And most children seem to, I know a lot of the parents seem to be parking in the graveyard. But the shortcut, children go to school during the day, to my knowledge, during the opening hours of the cemetery. So I cannot understand that response. It just makes no sense to me. It's no logical sense. And
what doesn't make sense? They say it's just basically a shortcut to allow children a safer way. And, you know, safety is the issue. The byword of this summer anyway, allow children a safer way to get to and from school.
Yes. And that's in daytime hours. And
okay,
if the gates
good point. Okay. Yeah.
The daytime hours, and also within law, the children would be accompanied by adults. So I'm not. They have to be in the graveyard. So I'm not quite sure on that response at all. And I have responded to them. I'm waiting for them to come back to me. And if it was logical, I would accept it. But it's illogical. It's my issue is with the nighttime hours. And that there isn't security at night, so therefore, just put the gates back and close it at night.
Okay.
And I don't see the problem with that. If the response is that it's about the children, then the children are using it during the daytime and they're
That's
happy
good
with
point.
That.
Yeah, and fairly restricted daytime. They'd all be home from school by five, wouldn't they? Even at their second level, John Rolfe. John, good afternoon, Joe at RT.ie. You know the missing gates in Dean's Grange.
Yeah, it's up near where my mother's and father's grave is, actually.
And is it a problem?
Yeah, what I've noticed, I visit the grave fairly regularly, but there's a lot of people who come in from an estate where those gates used to close off, but they walk their dogs in the cemetery, and I've seen a lot of dog fouling even on top of people's graves, you know.
Oh, for God's sake. And our dog, John, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought Irish dog walkers in particular have got very used to bringing the plastic bag.
Well, a lot of them do, don't get me wrong, but there's still a few renegades who, you know, walk conform, you know.
And what do you think of Tara's solution, which is closed, lock the gates at night time?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea because the cemetery was always, you have to be out of there by 4 o'clock. The guy would go around locking the gate.
Okay, yeah.
Now with those gates open, basically it's open 24/7, and the cemetery, the actual vista of it has gone down big time over the last few years. There's this peculiar weed that has started to grow.
We've covered it more times than the weed has covered the cemetery at this stage. It's so awful.
Yeah, it's really bad, and I've never seen that weed anywhere, only in the cemetery. I don't know whether it just likes growing in cemeteries or whatever, but it looks really bad, and you basically, at some points, you can't even see the headstones. The weeds are so bad.
Tara, it's your grandfather and grandmother. Tell us, and your uncle. Tell us a little bit about them. Obviously, you're very caring and engaged in looking after their resting places. Tell us about your grandfather for a start.
Well, my grandfather was an associate of Michael Collins. He was a major in the old Irish Republican Army.
Yeah.
He told his family that he only ever took a gun in his hand so that they'd never have to tip their forelock
to any man. He was a very peaceful, beautiful person.
Okay.
Who went about his duties, and it was very well respected in Monkstown, where I grew up, and I grew up in the family home where he had his 11 children. His first wife had died, so he had many children between the two families,
okay.
And then my grandparents, both families, and then my uncle Michael lived with us because he was ill all his life, so he's reposed there as well. So this is highly personal. My mom's alive now, and his other children would be elderly. A lot of them are dead, and so they can't do this. What I'm trying to do is just keep the place sacred and then protect it, particularly at night. Shangana, there's also two Taoiseachs buried there. There's two Taoiseachs buried in Shangana. Mm-hmm. It's both run, both cemeteries are run by the same county council in completely different ways. My best friend is buried in Shangana, and it's near me. I get to go there. I get to know that the place is closed up at night. It's immaculately kept. And so therefore, we're even treating the reposed differently for some reason that I just can't fathom.
And when you mentioned to Taoiseach being buried in the same graveyard, there's a graveyard up in near Richmond Barracks, the Richmond Estate now, great community up in Inchicore, and that's called the Golden Bridge Graveyard, and it's beautiful, beautiful graveyard. But there's two Taoiseach buried there as well. Liam Cosgrave, when he was the first minister at the time, and when we go back to the 1920s, and then his son, Liam T. Cosgrave was buried there, and his father was buried there as well. So two heads of the Irish government were buried there quite close to each other. Now, the link there, Tara, is that that cemetery had a way for young people or vandals to get in at night time. And the place was destroyed.
Yes.
And that's why it's run by Glasnevin. In fact, that was that Golden Bridge was built by Daniel O'Connell before he built Glasnevin. So they've taken great care of it. They've completely refurbished it, but they lock it firmly every evening, firmly and fairly every evening. So you're right. A lot of graveyards do actually close up at night time. So Tara, I'm trying to think here now. I'm trying to argue from the other side. For example, okay, you say close them around, I'm suggesting 5 o'clock, but what about people who want to visit their loved ones, so to speak, in the evening time? Now, I know the evenings are closing in, but in the evening time, which it would, surely the gates being open then would help.
I don't know. They can have summer opening hours, but I think because Shangana is strictly 4:30 p.m., they actually stop cars in the area at 4 p.m. for whatever reason, and they close. But also on their own bylaws, it does say they close. The gates are closed at 4:30 p.m. This is on the bylaws to do with Dean's Grange. They don't quite know what's going on. I mean, if there was a compromise to be made, yes, if people want to visit in the evening when it's bright, because it's safer, then fair enough. But I think once it's dark, it's safer for everyone if the gates are closed.
Yeah.
Even from a lighting point of view, it just makes no sense to me anyway.
But I wonder, I am trying to think, maybe you can help me, Tara, maybe you can help me, John. I am trying to think of the council say many graveyards, most graveyards in Ireland are open to pedestrians and cycled to use the cemetery after the main gates are closed. The main gates they close, but the pedestrian and cycle gates don't. Is that true?
Not that I know.
I'm trying to think of, well, there's Mount Jerome in Dublin, obviously. That's
not,
That's close, isn't it? Yeah, definitely close. And that's owned. That's owned by Massey's, the Undertaker, as far as I know. There's Glasnevin. There's the one out near the airport, where Jerry and Veronica are buried, among others. And that's closed as well. I know, I can see the barrier. I can see it being closed in the evening time. I'd love to know, are there cemeteries in Ireland that are open 24/7 for shortcuts and cyclists? If there are near you, please let us know. And above all, let us know how it works out. Tara O'Grady and John Ralph, go to Míle Maith, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Back to road safety. We've been covering it now for a number of days. Led off yesterday by Liam O'Herlihy. And if you can, please listen back to it. It was a powerful contribution from Liam about his daughters who were killed in a car crash along with their best friend and indeed their best friend's daughters. And they were a member of a group called Navita, that's Neve, and Anita, and Carolyn, and Carmel, and indeed Emma, her 20-month-old baby. Michael Houlihan, Michael, good afternoon. Your contribution, please.
Hello, Joe. Lovely to talk to you.
Likewise.
I just feel, Joe, that I have a lot of experience of driving between Drogheda and Dublin, particularly Louth, Meath, and my experience, Joe, is that they can bring in all the laws they like, and I certainly welcome the lowering of the limit. But you know, it's a cultural behaviour, and I myself drive a car and I'm a cyclist. But what I find is that big, powerful cars, I don't go into too many names, but I mentioned BMWs, Audis, and all this. Anytime you have straight roads or things like this, there people who drive those cars, they have a license to drive at 120 miles, kilometres an hour, wherever they are, on the country roads around Louth and Meath or on the main roads. And I think that I've only seen a guard once in my life on the M1 going to Dublin pull a driver in who was trying to push another driver out of the fast lane into traffic in the slow lane, like actually bullying of the highest order. And until I think the guards actually really arrest people, like tailgating, as far as I know, is illegal. It's probably the most prominent thing that I see on the roads locally, are people tailgating others, particularly tailgating elderly drivers or people with M signs or L signs. You know, there's no manners, there's no consideration given. And when you're driving these twisty country roads, like...
And Michael, but what do you think? The government response seems to be just a blanket, which they can do overnight with bylaws, just a blanket reduction in the speed limit. But how was that policed and enforced?
Well, I mean, Joe, I rarely have seen the traffic core out. The only time I've seen them is very late at night when I'm coming home, where they check your, if you're coming home at 2 in the morning, they check certainly your license, they check your road tag, they think at checkpoints. But I have never seen actually a lot of mobile units out on things like the motorway. Like, and we know that people have been kilometres.
Like, what did you say about kilometres there, Michael?
Like somebody there, I heard on RT there last week, somebody was, when they brought in the safe driving, somebody was tracked at 180 kilometres on a motorway. Like, that's rally driving.
It is, yeah. Okay, stay with us, Michael. 51551 text.
Yeah.
Larry Connell, Larry's there on WhatsApp. Larry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
We were talking over the last few days as well about the effect on people who've been in car crashes and survived. You say it happened, even though it happened 45 years ago. Now, it's worth pointing out, I was looking it up last night, the number of road deaths in Ireland around 1972, when there was half the number of cars on the road, was well over 600. Well over 600. Now, that's dropped, thankfully, but one is one too many, as we know. And it's dropped to between 300 and 400, even though the number of cars has increased dramatically, exponentially. So on the one hand, we're going in the correct way, the correct direction. But on the other hand, when we see an awful rise, and remember, every person who dies in a road crash, that's 100%. Percentages are meaningless. That's 100% of their life gone and the families affected so dramatically. Larry, can you say you crashed 45 years ago. Do you remember it?
I do, actually. I was coming back from a dance in the Fillmore West End Bray. It was a horse lips. And
right.
I was coming over to Wicklow Gap because I live in a tie. And just above Hollywood, there's a switchback bridge there on the Kings River. And I just fell asleep coming up to it from the Glen the Lock side. Hit the bank and tumbled over into the field and tumbled over twice or three times and ended up on my side in the river. Luckily, it was summertime because that river was low at the time, but that river can rise to 10 foot above if it's raining up in the gap. So I just remember tumbling and crashing, the banging sound, and the glass came in on me. Now, luckily, I had a bucket seat, and it was kind of a full rally harness type thing. And I was interested in motorsport at the time, and I had a full harness on in the car, which straps went over both shoulders. So I was basically kept in the seat fairly tightly. But at the same time, I still can remember the crashing sound in the dark and then the water flowing and the water hitting the exhaust of the engine. You could hear the sizzle in the back. So I just climbed out and went up the road to a house.
And when you
I can still remember that.
But when you say, Larry, that you fell asleep.
Yeah. Are you sure that 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's what happened. You fell asleep. Yeah.
I just nodded off, and all of a sudden I saw the light as the lights hit the bank. I saw the light, and of course I was going. I just nodded off, so I hadn't slowed down for the bridge. Because I know that road fairly well, and I ride a bike on it as well, a motorbike. So I'm reasonably familiar with that road. But they still haven't done anything with that road there, in that there should have been an Armco barrier put there years back because people have gone through it. There's only a bit of a barbed wire fence on it, which is useless because if anybody that does the gap will be familiar with it, and it's just a foot high clay bank, and then you're dropping into the field, which then goes into the river, the King's River as it's called.
And you think that those 4-point rally seatbelts saved you?
They saved me that night because I didn't move around too much in the seat.
Yeah.
I mean, normal lap and diagonal belts just go over one shoulder, but this was a bucket seat and that belt, and so I didn't really move. I just got a small bit of glass in my forehead, but that was it. And I'm fairly tall. It was an old Hillman imp, which was a strong body, fortunately. But
very. You know, I saw one on the motorway a week ago. They, looking back on them now, the Hillman imp is like a dinky, Larry. It's so small.
Well, it was like a dinky, It's only when we see the old cars now beside the newer ones we realize how small they actually were.
And we presume the cars are safer and stronger and airbags and braking systems. And
well, they're stronger for pedestrians, you see. In the old days, we didn't worry about pedestrians. We had bumpers that would sort of do harm and things like that. But now we have absorption zones in the front for pedestrians.
And you were a retained firefighter as well.
I was attending accidents, and you know, when you come up against being a local, like when you come up against somebody dead in the car before the family even know that they're actually been killed, it's kind of sobering as well, you know.
Because invariably you'd know somebody.
I understand about speed and the you know, when young fellas get a few girls in a car, they want to show off, you know. I suppose we all did it at the time, but the problem is when you injure somebody through your own negligence or kill them, worse again, you've got to live with that for the rest of your life. You know, I was lucky I was on my own in the car that night, so nobody else would have died, only me, if it had been bad enough. But when you've got two or three other people's lives in your hands, basically it should be sobering. But we have far, far faster cars, we have good motorways, but some of our back roads are still not up to scratch. And
so what do you think of this blanket decision?
I think it's going to cause frustration. I hope it does save lives. But the problem is, when people get into a car, especially a modern car, which accelerates, and I mean, the electric cars now are even worse. I saw a guy in a Tesla the other day coming back. I drive on the road every day. So I saw a guy in a Tesla coming from Kilcock, and he overtook a car, and he overtook me first and slotted back in because there was a guy coming the other way. Now, the Tesla can accelerate really fast. But the next thing, then he overtook the car that was in front of him. And I could see a kind of a speed wobble because there was a car coming the other way and he had to get back in very, very fast. Yeah. But then we got to plane and there was roadworks and we were all there within a couple of cars length of each other, you know. So all the speed he did for was for nothing.
For nothing, that's not fair. And you say you ride ride a motorbike as well. Now we hear of a lot of it.
Yeah, well, we have to ride carefully because sometimes I think we're invisible to drivers. They don't look or they don't think, you know, they open doors before they look behind in the mirror. Now, in fairness, on the other side of it, some of us go a bit fast and we arrive out of nowhere and boom, past the guy in the car and didn't even see, you know. So we all just have to sort of slow down a little bit. And the trick is leave earlier. It's the simplest answer to it all. Leave five minutes earlier and you will get to the airport. All the lights will be green. You won't miss the plane. Yeah. Leave 5 minutes late and every light's red and everything goes
you go into a panic now, and a fog.
A man spoke of that car yesterday, the one that turns over that the RSA
has. Brilliant. Sounds brilliant, yeah.
I sat in that in the show in Atai one day and they buckle you into a seat and literally it turns over quite slowly. It's on a special frame. It just rotates over. So you get the idea of what's being like upside down in a car when it's crashing and it's now there's no banging sounds, there's no crashing glass, there's none of all the other things that go on in it, bits of things falling around in the car and stuff, you know. It's good, but it's still not the real thing. You'll never forget the real thing, I can tell you that.
You never, and you, as you say, it was 45 years ago, you walked away from it thankfully to the nearby house, but it still stays with you.
It still stays with me because, you know, I remember how easily it happened. And forever after that, if I was tired in the car, I'd wind the windows down, turn off the heater, turn up the radio, or stop and have a bit of a nap. But it can happen so easily, especially when the heat's on in the wintertime, you know.
Stop, grab a coffee. No, I don't drink coffee.
Yeah, well, stop.
But I presume they mean a Coke.
Well, the first thing to do is wind the windows down, turn off the heater, and make yourself uncomfortable. And that will kind of wake you up a little bit too. But, you know, not off as well.
Good bit of advice. Harvey is there. Harvey, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you? Good afternoon.
How are you? And what is the problem? Is it the speed limits and they're going to be changed dramatically in the next few days, it seems? Or are there other issues, Harvey?
Well, my personal opinion, I had a Skoda Octavia for about 11, 12 years. Okay. Then I went to the lovely gentleman at the airport and I upgraded my car to another Skoda Octavia. Mm-hmm. And still, they laughed at me when I would still have, every time I go in for a service. Now, what does this do? I find that there's too much now in the cars, that you're distracted when you're driving. You know, like people, you might as well be on your mobile phone to look at the screen, what has come up on the screen or something, you know, flashes, it changed, you know, do not, or press, do you want an upgrade now? And you're on the M1 driving down. I just find there's too much high tech in the cars. That's just me.
What about
I was coming on the motorway yesterday morning. I came on off the slip road, just coming out of Drogheda. And I witnessed what could have been an horrific accident. And the car actually, I don't know where he was speeding, but he went in between two cars on the outer lane and he actually had to drive on the verge. He ended up on the grass verge. I was at this stage on the inner slip lane and I thought, thank God I'm not out there, because your reaction that you would need would be so quick.
But Harvey, you mentioned all the new technology, but does the new technology not mean that when your phone rings, you can tap a button on your steering wheel and you can talk hands-free?
But I had that with my old car as well. But this is just, you're looking, you know, it's a push button. You know, where's that there? Let me answer it. And I'm just, probably I'm a bit too old-fashioned, but I just think there's too much on the screen, like it leaving chain screen, there's new updates, do you want to update? And they're, what happened to my Lyric or what happened to my RT1? I find far too much.
Okay. By the way, you say you drive the M1 every day?
Every morning, yes.
And do you ever get that sensation of being trapped in a lane between two trucks, one on either side of you?
I actually find that if you drive on the inside lane, you're actually overtaking everyone on the outside lane. Because everybody wants to be on the outside lane and you can actually you're overtaking all these people, which I'm breaking the law by doing that, but people don't know how to drive on the motorway.
And what's your, give me one tip for driving on the motorway.
Well, basically, you stay on the inside lane if you want to overtake.
The slow lane.
Indicate. Yes. Oh, sorry. Yes. You drive on the slow lane if you want to overtake. You indicate and then overtake a lorry or whatever and back into the slow lane again.
Lane.
But
okay.
People are driving on the fast line all the time.
Okay. You still there, Larry? Larry? Larry's still there on WhatsApp. Billy is there. Billy, good afternoon. Again, it's phones as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, I'm on the road every day of the week. I drove to Killarney yesterday. I'm in Limerick today. I mean, if you look at the cars and I see them passing me, every second or third car or somebody on their phone.
Do you mean they have the phone in their hand?
Phone in their hand, whether it's up to their ear, in front of their face, they're looking down, they're looking everywhere.
But Billy, I thought most cars had hands free.
They do, Joe. And I'm just looking at a car here, a 221 going to pass me here and your man is on the phone. I mean, you can use the hands free or you can put it up to your phone. People choose to have their phone in their hand, they're texting.
Yeah.
They're texting, they're emailing, they're doing anything but concentrating on the road.
Okay, give me one tip, one safety tip, Billy, or one driving tip.
Turn off your phone, Joe. Put it in the back seat.
Just forget about it.
Forget about it. I mean, as I say, you could be speeding. You don't have to be speeding to hit somebody. You could be doing 20 kilometres an hour going down the road with your phone in front of your face and you can't see what's coming against you.
Well, would you throw the phone in the back but still allow it to ring on hands-free, Billy?
I would have my phone on hands-free, so it's not on my person.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not picking up my phone. But if you drive the M50, I'm going to Dublin tomorrow, I can guarantee you when I leave the N7 onto the M50, in the space of 3 kilometres, I'll count 50 people who are on their phone.
Yeah.
On outside lane, centre lane and inside lane.
Are people wearing their seatbelts?
Seatbelts isn't the issue, Joe. Speed isn't the issue. Phones is the issue.
Okay, you're adamant.
You can bring the speed limit down to 60 kilometres an hour.
Well, that's what they are doing. They're dropping it by 20 everywhere. Do you think that would make a difference?
No, not if they gave 10 penalty points for being caught in your phone, that would make a difference.
Yeah, well, so anyway, I take your point. Thanks, Billy. Finbar, Spain.
Hello, Joe.
Give me one safety tip and one driving tip.
For nighttime driving, check your lights. And mount the cars, I mean, and they're all in one headlight and the other up in the air and some with no rear lights at all. Check your lights, especially coming into the winter.
Okay. Now, you say young drivers.
Well, driving in general. Now, just let me say, Joe, you referred there, 1972, 640 deaths.
620,
there's been a vast improvement since that, mm-hmm. down the years. I think since 2011, we've been under 200.
Yeah.
That's just one statistic there. And the other one, the surprising, I was just looking up things, that the second most casualties on the road are who? Not passengers.
It's pedestrians. Yeah.
And we're the third worst in Europe. Now, young drivers, right, to get a car, it all goes back to what the man was saying maybe yesterday about the driving test in Finland, but to get a car, and it seems to be this kind of a culture, mm-hmm. to get a little car, the first to get it souped up, then to put the illegal coloured number plates, which are not legal.
Okay, yeah.
They drop the suspension, get all sorts of blue lights under it and all, which are all illegal, and big loud exhausts. Now, they're not being pulled for it. They seem to be kind of there in the guards all the time. We'll do more. We'll break the speed limit. We'll get more. And if the guards do get anything, if there's 3 or 4 in the car, they're out with their phones. They're there in the guards. We're videoing you. There was on social media there a few weeks back, up in Donegal somewhere, there was one of these rallies or get-togethers, I don't know what to call them. And the guards were, there was a fella doing wheelies on the road and donuts or whatever to call them. And two guards came and confiscated the car. Well, there was 200 young youths jeering the guards and calling them this and that and the other. You know, there seems to be a kind of a culture among certain people that they take. Now, if the guards are harder on that and make them obey all the laws from the beginning, it would be a help, you know what I mean? Kind of zero tolerance. And make them respect the law. But you see, they seem to get away with one thing and they just ignore the law then eventually and
you
carry
see,
on.
And we had, again, I'm so conscious of this, especially as I lost my own brother in a car accident in which another person also died.
Yes, I know that, yeah.
But like the numbers, and that's what I'm saying, everyone affected is affected 100%. But in percentage terms, the numbers have been coming down fairly dramatically.
Yes.
Since the beginning of this century. Like the beginning of this century, there was 415 dead. Terrible.
Yeah, 1931, 184, 32.
Yeah,
there was a dramatic decrease in front of, I was just looking at it here, in the middle of the Anglo-German War there in 43, 44, 45. There was no cars on the road.
Yeah, petrol has been rationed and there was much fewer cars. But in 2022, it was 155 killed. But so far this year, tragically, it's 127. And,
that's right.
It's a figure that's
a few tragic multiple ones. But now the thing about pedestrians, I have this thing about this, and I tried it out. The amount of pedestrians killed were the third highest in Europe. We're 30%. The European average is 18%. I see people walking, and now they may have a high vis on. But to have these plugs in their ears and all sorts of earphones.
No, that's a good point.
And they're in
yeah.
a different world
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And they're, in their own mind, they're conducting Beethoven's Fifth or they're away in a different planet altogether. Now, if I go in for my test in a car or van, whatever, first thing when the tester sits in, he checks the seat and he goes, presses the yoke. And if he doesn't hear beep, beep, you fail your test.
Okay.
But I have to have that. But the person walking the road doesn't have to make themselves available to hear that warning.
Yeah.
And the amount of people still don't get the message about walking, facing the oncoming traffic.
And wearing a high vis or even as well as walking, if you haven't got a torch, put your phone light on and put it in your outside hand, so to speak, the one in the middle of the road and
especially
and
on
face
rural roads,
towards,
the best rural roads, the most fatalities. But people don't realise it's not that you should walk on the right road; it's the law. You must. And people don't realise that.
Okay, Finbar. Good evening, Margaret. That's Finbar, County Offaly. Declan, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. Actually, great discussion you have going there. I suppose you'd have to feel sorry for the minister and for the Garda Commissioner, given the recent number of awful fatalities. But it's important, I suppose, that discussion doesn't go down narrow channels. Yes, speeding and phones are all, but we have to class this as behaviour. And we have to change our behaviour on the roads, whether it's in motorways or so on. I mean, your earlier caller from Drogheda said about the way we drive in the motorways. I said to your researcher, two of my daughters did their driving test back in May, and I asked them afterwards, what did you learn about driving on the motorway? And they said, nothing.
Yeah,
not in the course of their instruction. Now, the only way to change our behaviour is through dramatic consequences. That's where you're stopped by Gardaí on the road. You referred to the number of fatalities. I would say, I think it was 98 or 99, there were about over 400 killed in the road.
Yeah.
That fell by more than 50% from 2000 to 2005, and I travelled extensively in Ireland at the time. The reason it did, Joe, there were literally squad cars everywhere.
Okay.
You can talk about reducing speed limits, that's not going to work on its own. It may seem like a good idea on certain high-risk roads, but at a guess, Joe, would 10 million change the signage on our roads, on our L and R class roads? And what about the cost of changing the highway code? Wouldn't it be better off to police the roads properly?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're missing. You've had lorry drivers on there, and they'll tell you in the last 5, 6, 7 years, you don't see squad cars on the roads, not in the frequency that you did in the early noughties. So, yeah, we were in a car going up to Dublin this morning on the M7, three lanes, and Joe, it's the left-hand lane, first overtaken lane, second overtaken lane. And now I'm open to contradiction here. You are not allowed to be on your phone on hands-free when you're driving. Now, I'm open to be contradicted.
My understanding is if you're hands-free. It's not encouraged. not encouraged, obviously, to be anyway distracted. But my understanding is it is definitely illegal to have a phone up to your ear. Definitely. We'll check that out, Declan. Pat is in Pat is in East Clare. Pat, good afternoon. Thanks, Declan. Pat.
Sure, how's it going? A lot of the points I wanted to make have been made in the last 15, 20 minutes. Right?
Okay, no worries.
But my attention was drawn to your programme yesterday by that nice gentleman from County Limerick who lost his 2 daughters, right?
Yeah, Liam, yeah.
Yeah, and you were saying the question there about why have a road deaths dropped dramatically. Well, mainly over the last 15 years, we've had the Dublin-Limerick motorway, which was eternally dangerous. Every weekend there was a major accident on the road. We now have the Dublin-Cork motorway, which is also dramatically improved, also Dublin-Galway road, which is dramatically improved. So our roads, main roads are generally have improved dramatically well, but the problem is arising on our non-main roads because there appears to be nobody really taking control of the non-main roads. The main roads have generally been maintained. There's a few of them with errors, like around Crusheen there going to Galway, where there was errors made on the road. There's a problem there on Burt Hill as well. But overall, our main roads are very good and very safe, and that's why the figures have dropped dramatically. But the same effort has not been put into the non-main roads, and there was most of them are in disgraceful condition. And since this new law came in about not cutting bushes, from May to September, there are hundreds.
Well, that's a big. I heard, anytime you hear Michael Healy Ray on the TD, that's his first thing about cutting the bushes on the, especially the secondary roads. Yep. What about reducing the speed limits? That's what the government are proposing dramatically.
There's two problems here. The enforcement is practically non-existent, right?
Yeah, now, everyone seems does seem to be a common denominator.
Yeah, yeah. And the speed bans are just a joke. Now, the minister came out the other day and, like, threw biscuits and elephants, offered 1.2 million more to police stock a few more vans around the countryside. They're just a complete waste of money and space. That money should go into giving Gardaí more money and more unmasked squad cars to catch all these culprits. Because 95% of people on the road are behaving impeccably well.
Yeah,
but there's a 5% breaking every rule in the book by stop signs, yield right away signs, double white lines. I'm on the road every day, I see them, and it's unbelievable what's going on. And all the government do is trot out the same old story about phones, speed, and seatbelts. That's all you hear constantly. And this morning, I have Mr. Chambers, whom I discovered is now responsible for road safety, because RSA.
And in fairness, Jack has a lot of responsibilities, hasn't he?
Yeah, but. I nearly swallowed my organic egg listening to about speed limit signs. Now, they're reducing signs that are already wrong. If you have a speed limit sign, 100 miles, and you drop it to 80, you're still wrong.
And you see some people think the speed sign, Pat, is a target. It's not a target, it's a restriction. Yeah. Thanks, Pat. I want to try and get more people. Anthony O'Flynn before the break. Anthony, thanks, Pat.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Road safety and teaching children.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah, I've been 41 years teaching, and you're not going to police your way out of this situation. You're not going to find your way or threaten your way out of it. So, way when I started teaching in 82, I noticed the problem of safety belts. So I said, I'm going to try and solve this within the classroom. So I used to teach 5th and 6th class boys, and boys are hungry at that stage for knowledge. You get them at 15 and 16, they have the attitude. So I said to them, listen, you guys travel in cars, I want you to wear your seatbelts. And someone said, I don't wear my seatbelt. So I said, okay, tomorrow we'll do science, go and do an experiment. So I took in a box and I had 2 old glasses. Now I get them to do the experiment, Joe. It's not what you teach, it's how you teach it. And this is going to be indelibly stamped. Now, I could lecture from the top of the class for an hour and they'll forget it 10 minutes later. So I said to them, take the box. And they took it. Put the glasses in it. And they did. And I said, wrap up the box and sellotape. And we threw the box across the room till it hit the skirting. I says, get a scissors. And there was a group of them. Bring it up to the desk. Open it. And they opened it. And I said, what have you got? And the glasses were shattered. And they said, sir, it's in bits. I said, you're in a car. That's you. Colin, that's you. Peter, that's you. And I remember the guys. And I said, now, I took out the glasses, I put 2 glasses in, and it's essential that the kids do this, not me. And they took the glasses, taped them into the box, closed the box, sealed it, threw it down the room, and I said, right, are they broken? And they started taking bets. Oh, they are, sir, they're not, sir. I said, open up the box. And it says, they were perfect. And I said, that was the equivalent of a 60-mile-an-hour crash.
Oh, good luck.
He says, that's your seatbelt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I said to myself, this works, Joe. So we went from that to aquaplaning. And we went from that to impact, G-force, curve. I said, where do crashes occur? Everyone into groups, all of you, take out your copies, put the date on top. And when they're working in groups, the learning is up to 95%. You retain 95% of the experimentation. And they said to me, I said, where are accidents most likely to happen? This stuff they'll retain when they get into a car, Joe. Today's drivers are the children now, okay, who were in sixth class 10 years ago. So the people sitting in fifth and sixth class now, Joe, are going to be driving in 10 years' time. We're going to educate our way out of this, but we're not going to police our way out of it.
Okay.
So it could be incorporated at primary level. It would work. I've seen it work.
Okay, and it's a good line. Educate ourselves out of this.
Well, if you...
Is Anthony gone? You gone, Anthony? Gone. Okay, I'll take the break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Colette, hard to believe,
Hello.
But go ahead, I believe you.
Hello, Joe.
How are you?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
That's good.
Yes, I was going down the Catherine Tynan Road in Talla the day before yesterday, and there was a lady driving a car, and she had a Jack Russell on her knee.
No.
And the Jack Russell, yes, driving with its head out the window. Now, when she took off of the lights, I thought maybe she's going to put the dog into the back, or she'll shrug it off to the passenger seat. But no, she took off the head out the window with the dog, and I could not believe my eyes. I really couldn't. I thought, all the car crashes that have happened in the last few weeks, you know, this is absolute, you know.
Crazy. So the dog, and I hear all the gags now coming in about guide dogs and all this carrying, but the dog is on her lap. Her two hands are on the steering wheel, but the dog is looking out the window.
Yeah, well, she has one arm, or it's kind of around the back of the dog on the steering wheel, and the other one is under the neck of the dog.
I see it exactly. Brilliant description, yeah.
No. So it's like it's in a stranglehold. But imagine if she has an impact on that airbag, you know, explodes.
That's the end of the dog.
Well, that's the end of the dog, and she is severely injured.
I don't see if you beep, people don't know what you're beeping for, and other people get distracted. And if you beep, I never do it, even if I recognise the cyclist. If you beep and there's a cyclist nearby, the cyclist might get discombobulated. So you have to limit your horn and your beeps, so to speak.
You do.
When you're driving. You say it was a woman.
Also, the woman.
On her
knee.
Yeah. So the woman who was driving the Catherine Tynan Road there in.
Road.
It's near Fear. It's the Fairhouse side of Talla, is it? I'm confused. Or,
No, it'll be the Talla Hospital side.
Talla Hospital. Oh, it's okay.
Going down towards the Grange Road.
Can you explain to us what your Jack Russell was doing? Assisting you in the driving of the car.
I mean, she seems to be on her phone, like chatting away. You know,
hands-free. Yeah.
You know,
not bizarre. So, that's crazy.
So she really wasn't engaged in her driving, was she? You know, how could she be concentrating with the dog on your knee and chatting away and laughing? And I mean, fine, that's grand. You can do what you like, but
let's hope they learned their lesson. Una, thanks, Colette. Una Heron. Una, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
This sounds like something out of a horror movie, Una.
I know.
Cut a horla, Una. What's
yeah, it? Up my mum is buried up in Tardis Town, a lovely cemetery
near the
my
airport.
Friend Helen and my friend Helen and myself went up, and my friend Helen always loved walking down the different graves on the way back, and
lovely.
Summer's evening, and we went up to my man, and we went up to Mountain Moor, and he was also there. And we were walking back down, and came to the car park. It was still bright, and the the car was there in its own gate, huge gates. Now, there were huge steel gates. Yeah. And a chain, a really huge chain on the gate. So, like, panic, okay, my friend was retired, but I needed a car for work the next morning. So I rang Garda Town Cemetery and there was no answer.
So you're locked, you're now locked in the graveyard.
Well, that's, that's what it looks like.
Yeah, okay.
So,
could you access your car?
My car was in it with me. My car was locked in with me.
Well, you could get in and sit in your car.
We could, yeah. But okay. It was a summer's evening. It was lovely. Yeah. So we were just kind of...
But you did panic.
Oh, yeah. Of course we did, yeah. So we then rang the police and they said, no, sorry. There's nothing we can do. Yeah. And we then rang the fire brigade. And, oh, my God, our heroes.
Superheroes.
They were so kind. Absolutely. They came from Swords.
Brilliant, guys, great station, full-time station.
Gorgeous guys. Yeah. Got out and went to the gate.
Right.
So that the lock was actually sitting round the gates. It wasn't actually locked.
Yeah.
But, we didn't know, of course.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Oh, no. We thought, it was a huge lock. Like, each chain would be the size of the palm of your hand.
And did you feel foolish?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, but do you know what? The guys were so nice.
Yeah,
they really truly were. I won't forget it. Yeah.
Okay. And it doesn't sound like you're going to forget those five hunks from Swords either, Una.
No, absolutely.
You're dying to see them again. Okay.
Absolutely,
So there's a number of lessons there. One, check absolutely, completely that the gates are actually locked. And two, if they are actually locked, well, then your best bet is to ring your local fire service. Good to meet you, Mahagud.
Exactly.
Una. Thanks indeed, Una. Back tomorrow at 1:45. Shana Gorm, producer. Ray Darcy's next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.